There's a new book that talks about the whole idea of social justice and identity politics. And it's called Unjust. It's by Noah Rothman, who's a fine writer whose work we've cited on the show before with great approval. He is an associate editor of Commentary Magazine, and he's a contributor to MSNBC, NBC News, and a widely followed commentator. The new book, Unjust, Social Justice and the Unmaking of America, is posted up at our website at michaelmedved.com. Noah, congratulations on the book. And would I be right in guessing that some of the most high-profile winners in this last congressional election were illustrative of precisely the kind of identity politics and social justice concepts that you decry in your book?
Sure. I think, and thank you very much for having me. I think it's probably very difficult to define social justice as they understand it, because even its advocates are pretty vague about what they mean when they invoke the term. It's hard to find a universal definition for it, because its advocates seem to really view it as just a way to think about fairness and equality and justice in a society that is dedicated to righting historical wrongs. And so people might not have a whole lot of a really generalized understanding of what social justice is in practice. But as you said, and as I think it really manifests, it is identity politics, but sort of identity politics as an alternative governing ethos, a way of organizing society that is in many ways antithetical to how the United States is organized and how it operates. Its advocates commit themselves to a paradigm that is in many ways paralyzing. It advocates thinking of oneself as a victim, of inhabiting this unnavigable matrix of prejudices. It forces them to embrace discrimination as a means of achieving social leveling in order to achieve fairness and equality, and it breeds disillusionment and bitterness. Its advocates increasingly believe things that I think are lies, frankly, but are incompatible with the American experiment, like meritocracy is a myth, and that your agency is a lie, that your accidents of birth put you on a course in life that is in many ways predestined, that separatism is good, because it prevents social discomfort, and that colorblindness in institutions is naive at best and, frankly, dangerous at worst. And when I tell social justice advocates on the left that white supremacists believe all this too, they kind of look at you funny, like they've never really thought of it that way.
So what I've never understood is this idea that we want institutions to be color conscious rather than color blind. But to do that, you have to completely uproot the idea of democracy, because if you have democracy, wouldn't the normal thing to expect to be that the majority would look after its own interests, and suddenly minorities would be victimized if you were color conscious all the time?
Precisely. It's a tyranny of the majority. But I'm not sure that social justice advocates are really all that familiar with the theories they're advocating. These are not new ideas, as you say. A lot of this is very old. It is not an improvement on the meritocratic egalitarian idea around which the United States is built. It advocates creating discriminatory institutions in order to achieve equality, and that's been tried, and every time it is tried, it results in tyranny. But that's precisely what its advocates advocate. They want to see negative social leveling, downward social leveling. Once upon a time, the social justice activist used to be an advocate for non-discriminatory practices. They have sort of made a moral argument that the American experiment was not living up to its own ethos, its own ideas. No longer. These advocates advocate for a peculiar type of justice, which they define as downward equality. And frankly, American institutions are just not designed to deliver that sort of thing. And when you create these moral imperatives, these existential moral imperatives that American institutions can't deliver, then one of two things happen to you. You get very disillusioned and you withdraw, or you resolve to radicalize and attack the foundations of these wholly immoral institutions because they cannot be allowed to stand. And in my view, that's why we've seen a lot more violence in the streets over the last decade. I think it's a trend.
Okay, when you talk about the trend, it's not just politics and it's not just political institutions. One of the things that you cite in your book is the way that the concept of social justice has become something of a substitute religion and has even infected some mainstream religions in the United States. Why the particular vulnerability there?
Yeah, well, because this is not a, you know, the theological nature of this belief system is not a figment of anybody's imagination. Social justice was a religious concept originally. It was a concept that developed out of the Catholic Church's effort in the 19th century to create some sort of an alternative to the secular Protestant Enlightenment. And what they came up with was something that had some collectivist elements to it, but it was really much more of a way to think about just charity and your obligation to your fellow man. John Rawls came along in the late 1960s, early 1970s, and put some more meat on these bones, designed some ways for us to think conceptually about justice, thinking of it as a finite commodity that needed to be distributed in an enlightened fashion, and in order to do that, a distributor needed to do that, an enlightened distributor did that from behind a veil of ignorance. So he was blindfolded to the beneficiaries of his distribution, and his own biases couldn't be satisfied by that distribution. Modern social justice advocates have no use for the veil of ignorance. That is a morally obtuse concept. You have to know who the distribution is going to, who the oppressed are historically, who is oppressed historically, who needs to be lifted up, and who should be tamped down.
Well, what comes across in your book very clearly, the book is called Unjust, Social Justice and the Unmaking of America, is that for today's social justice warriors, the feeling of hatred toward the presumed oppressor for people who have been successful is far more potent than any love for the oppressed masses. Wouldn't you say that's a tendency?
And it is almost always success that is the source of consternation. And it is usually couched in this idea that these activists are seeking to impose some retribution on individuals who benefit from conditions of which they may not even be aware that are rooted in historical injustices.
Well, that's the whole emphasis on white privilege and on reparations. To the best of your knowledge, of any of the Democratic candidates this time, and some of them are pretty radical, have any of them endorsed the ideas of reparations for instance, slavery in the United States?
Not that I'm aware of, and the book doesn't take a position on something like that, because it is at least designed to be reparative. I'm not even sure it would satisfy the modern social justice activist, because it is not sufficiently retributive. Retribution is the goal here. Downward social leveling is the goal. Confiscatory policies that take evenly from Americans as a tax pool, I don't think would satisfy the modern social justice activist. It would need to be much more targeted towards individuals who are perceived to have benefited from those historical conditions.
Well,
again,
hence,
this is something the United States cannot do.
Hence, one of the things that unites virtually every Democrat who's running for president is the desire for increased tax rates on people who have succeeded in this country. The book by Noah Rothman just published, and it's causing a stir and great controversy, as it should. And Noah will be pleased to speak to you about it again. The book is called Unjust, Social Justice and the Unmaking of America. It's posted up at michaelmedved.com.